Welcome to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Today, we'll hear from candidates for county offices, sharing part of a candidate forum held last night at Western Iowa Tech Community College. There are four candidates for the Board of Supervisors and three candidates for treasurer. The incumbent board members are Republicans Jeremy Taylor and Matthew Ong. Democrat Flora Lee is challenging Jeremy Taylor, and Democrat Carter Smith is running against Matthew Ong. Two of the candidates for county treasurer attended the forum, incumbent Republican Mike Clayton and Democratic challenger Bruce Garbey. I was one of the panelists questioning the candidates, along with Woody Gottberg, news director at KSCJ Radio, and Teresa Weaver Basie, a member of the League of Women Voters and curator of education at the Sioux City Public Museum. The candidates were asked about issues concerning health care, finances, security, and economic development, among other issues. First, we'll hear the candidates introduce themselves and talk about why they're running for office.
And we will start at this end of the table with Flora Lee.
I decided to run for the County Board of Supervisors because I believe we need to start looking at working together with not only the Board of Supervisors, the department heads, but also with other governmental entities. I also believe that I am most qualified for this seat because I have proven leadership. I have always been a lifelong Sioux Citian. I have shown you as a community that I have leadership skills, communication skills, and I work on solving problems. I served on the Sioux City Community School Board for 12 years as the director, vice president, and president, and served on the financial committees, also the building facility committees. I was also very involved in the community in passing the local option sales tax for infrastructure for public schools. I believe also that I have the educational background and the proven leadership in many areas, and I want to address the issues of fiscal responsibility, you being a good steward of your tax dollars.
Thank you. Yeah. Mr. Taylor.
Well, thank you very much. I first of all want to thank the League of Women Voters, the participants in Western Iowa Tech. There's going to be a choice and a real difference laid out by our perspectives tonight, but I'm appreciative of the opportunity to do so. And I hope to once again earn the trust of county voters for the next 4 years. By trade, I'm an energy specialist for the Sioux City Schools and help to manage their energy spend and a budget of nearly $2 million. I've overseen a budget of $6.2 billion at the state level and help to turn the tide as far as our fiscal responsibility at the state level. And then I believe I have a unique perspective as an Iowa Army National Guard officer working with our Veterans Affairs. I'm also a father of six and a husband of one, and so I know about time management and organization. I hope to, in this next hour or two, really lay out the fiscal responsibility that we've engaged in as a board, the transparency and accessibility, as well as the way that we put people first rather than politics. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Smith.
Good afternoon, or good evening, everyone. I'd like to thank you all for attending tonight's event in the rain, and to the League of Women Voters and Western Iowa Tech for hosting. My reason for running for the County Board of Supervisors is having a strong-held belief that we need to have people in leadership that have lived experience and have a strong connection with the community and the work that's being done at both the county, the local, and the national level. My interest in public and mental health is what brought me to the table, and advocacy in prevention is kind of where my background sits. As far as qualifications, I was born and raised on a small family-owned farm and was involved with 4-H over the years, and then from there went on to go to college and work in the business and data field before switching over into public health and healthcare. My combination of nonprofit and lived experience along with the business background prior to that, I think, give me an interesting eye set when it comes to the table.
Thank you. Mr. Ong.
Thank you, and thank you all for coming out on this beautiful evening. Or staying in, I should say, which is easy. I live a balanced life, and I have a unique perspective, being the son of a Laotian refugee to this country and a husband to an immigrant from Honduras. My wife, Naylin, and I have been married for over 7 years, and one of the greatest honors of my life was being allowed by a district court judge to give a welcome address at her ceremony for U.S. citizenship, along with dozens of other immigrants. We have a beautiful daughter named Charlotte. She is ridiculously cute and a gift of God at this time in my life. I've earned 3 master's degrees or certifications in business administration, in theology, and in scuba diving. I have over 10 years experience in healthcare administration. I'm currently the office manager for the Foot and Ankle Clinic, a medical practice with 2 doctors and 5 support staff. In addition to executive experience, I'm also a court-appointed special advocate for the abused and neglected children in our community. But much of what I've done for the county board has actually been low-key background improvements, such as modernizing the agenda format, making committee information more transparent, or instituting annual performance reviews of department heads who may not have had one for several years. What are my qualifications? I've kept my word.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Clayton.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters for hosting this and appreciate everybody that came out tonight. My qualifications probably go back 18 years to when I was hired by Bob Noller, the former treasurer, to work in the motor vehicle department as the deputy there. 10 years there, and Bob decided he wanted to retire, so I thought, well, why not? I'm not ready to retire, and I enjoy what I do, and I enjoy working with the people that I work with, so I decided to run for county treasurer. And in 2010, I was elected to my first term. I'm currently serving my second term, and I want to continue with that. We have lots of work to do yet, and we'll discuss that as the evening goes on. But I enjoy what I do, and I have lots of more plans to put on the table for us to progress and to move the county forward in the treasurer's office.
Thank you. Mr. Garby.
Thank you all for inviting me out here tonight, and thank the League of Women Voters. I presently am retired. I retired from the Sioux City Assessor's Office after 25 and a half years. I worked with the treasurer's office over the number of years that I was there, hand in hand. I feel the need for separating motor vehicle and the treasurer's office apart. As you all know, the treasurer's office was moved out of the Woodbury County Courthouse, which is now up with motor vehicle. There's nowhere for the handicapped to make accessibility for any questions they may have, and I would like to change that. There's a number of changes that need to be made and looked at. There's a language barrier. We need bilingual in that office. There's just a number of things that go on that need to be addressed, and I would like to be the one to address those few options that I just mentioned.
Thank you. I will now ask that our panelists begin their questioning, and we'll begin with Ms. Weaver Basie to ask Ms. Lee.
Mrs. Lee, can you name 3 priority items you believe the board should work on next year? What would your number one priority be for the upcoming year, and why?
I think we need to look at the budget. We need to look at infrastructure and the mental health issues. And when I say the budget, we need to look at the mental health issues and the infrastructure. We need to look at it simultaneously, because we need to, the budget is our roadmap so that it will show us where we're going, where we can spend, where we cannot spend, and how we can make good decisions and provide quality services to the constituents of Woodbury County. So my top priority would be looking at the budget, making sure we had the funds, and making sure we could live within our means, and that we can continue to provide quality service within the county.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Gottberg, a question for Mr. Taylor.
Thanks. Good evening, everyone, and thanks again to all of you for running for office. There's about 3 dozen races in the tri-state area that are unopposed, so it's tough to get good people to run, so thanks again for taking the time and effort to run for office. Jeremy, the courthouse, it's been a big year celebrating its centennial. You had a big role in that. With improvements to the building, there have been window replacements, elevators. What do you think needs to be done to help modernize the historic building, and what work is there? What would you like to see done to improve the courthouse beyond where it's at after 100 years?
Sure. Thank you for the question. Well, we have what I believe is the finest building in the state of Iowa, and it's valued at between $80 and $100 million. And we work very closely with our state folks as well as our local preservation committee. We have modernized that building, and we won a national award for doing so. In fact, all of our buildings, by retrofitting it with LED lighting and being energy efficient, redoing all the steam traps. But we have a building that really has some serious needs, one of which is the terracotta, which is an architectural and artistic feature, really needs a lot of repair and work. So what we've set out to do is to have not only a 5, 10, 15 year plan for that building. So the terracotta is an integral part that's not only the decorative, but also on the outer facade. There are also some structural issues with that building that we're going to have to invest long-term in. And so I hope to work with our building services superintendent, as well as with our preservationist committee, to really have a long-term goal for those building projects and to be able to fund them in such a way that we don't do emergency repairs any longer. And I believe that that was part and parcel of the past board. We've been able to get a control.
Thank you.
And to have a long-term plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Hartnett, your question would be for Mr. Smith.
Okay. Well, as we all know, Woodbury County has split from the Sioux Rivers Mental Health and Disability Services to eventually go into the Rolling Hills region. Carter, could you tell me, do you think that the county could have stayed with Sioux Rivers and why?
I think when we look at the transition from Sioux Rivers over into Rolling Hills and where it started at and where we're at now, there's a lot of things along the way that impacted where we're at. And so when we look at if we could switch that and if we could have stayed versus leaving, I think it's a complicated answer. I think when you have leadership issues, you address them at the leadership level instead of putting the entire system in jeopardy as a result of failed leadership. So I would say that we need to take a look at the drawing table to see what services we're losing and who will lose services as we make this move to see if that's really what's in the best interest for the citizens of the county.
Thank you. Ms. Weaver-Basie, your question will be for Mr. Ung.
Mr. Ung, to stay with mental health for another moment, what would you do to address mental health issues within the county system? For example, unstable teenagers, mentally challenged individuals who possibly can't read, people in health crisis, etc.
Well, I think overall, and this is going to be a point of disagreement, obviously, but I think that we have addressed some of those issues by this move. Now, you brought up crisis situations. One illustration of what we've been dealing with as a county board has been that Woodbury County asked for funding for the 23-hour observation center at the crisis center. Woodbury County's rationale was that this was going to be a core service with new legislation. Sioux Rivers unfortunately voted that down. Woodbury County protested, and later on they decided to approve it. So these are just things where, you know, we talk about leadership issues, and sometimes we have to stay focused on the issues at hand and not the personalities. And I think that at the end of the day, what we really did was we listened to our largest mental health provider, Seal and Mental Health, and our largest hospital, Unity Point Health, that backed our move. They did so, they waded into a political issue that was very contentious, and the fact that they were willing to do that, I think, speaks volumes when we look at what the county's done. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gottberg, your question would be for Mr. Clayton.
All right, thanks. Mike, you are in your second term. What would you like to see change or improve if you're elected to a third term? Anything in particular that you would change as treasurer if you were elected to another term?
We've got a major project in the works right now, Woody, and that is to convert the county software from multiple pieces of software to one single system. That will take place over the next year. That's a major project, and it's going to require all hands on deck, and it's going to be stressful, and it's going to be extremely painful in the short run. It'll be very beneficial in the long term, because right now we have two different systems for financials. We have one in the auditor's office, one in the treasurer's office. Those two systems don't talk to each other. So what we have to do is we have to be able to balance those two systems so we can keep our books straight. between the auditors and the treasurer's office. That's one of the major projects we've got going on. Cross-training is always an ongoing need. Half of the staff in my office has been there less than 5 years, and half of that has been here less than 2 years. So we've got constant training going on, and that's an ongoing thing that we need to continue. With the new system coming in, there'll be even accelerated training. So,
thank you. Mrs. Hartnett, your question will be for Mr. Garby.
Mr. Garby, you spent 25 years, I believe, as a county assessor, is that correct?
I worked for the Sioux City Assessor's Office.
The Sioux City Assessor's Office.
I was an appraiser.
Okay. What did you learn from that that's going to help you if you become the treasurer?
Well, over the years we had to deal with the treasurer's office. There's a number of things that are involved with the treasurer's office. You've got the special assessments, you've got tax abatements, you got tax suspensions. You've got the tax sales, the property tax sales that are somehow acquired by the county, that they'll sell those on the tax deed. I'm not sure that I'm saying that properly, but
that's okay. Sounds good.
There was a number of things through the years. There was times we worked back and forth with special land splits or whatever that might be happened. There's just a number of things. I dealt with some tax issues. I was schooled on some tax issues. Although we assessed properties, we didn't tax them, so we really, but over the years we were sent to schools learning the tax issues.
Okay, thank you. In order so that we don't have the same panelists ask the same candidate, we're going to change our order just a little bit on the panelists. So Mr. Gottberg, your question will be for Mrs. Lee.
All right, thank you. Flora, when you announced your campaign, you spoke about returning the focus to the needs of our citizens in this race. What needs in particular?
I think we need to return to looking at the needs of the mental health services, and also looking in the rural area. There's a couple areas. We need to look at the roads, the infrastructure, the roads, the gravel roads, and getting those up to par, because those folks in the rural community are really concerned about the lack of quality gravel that's being used on the roads. And also, I think also public safety, we need to look at, we have screening in the courthouse, but what about Trosper Hoyt? That is a building that there is no real security there, even though you may have law enforcement close by, there's no real security there, and you still have juvenile court services, you have DHS there. So maybe we need to look at providing public safety also there. And I think we need to ask communities, what is it that you need, instead of always directing them to as what they need. And the economic development in some of our rural areas is very necessary.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mrs. Hartnett, your question will be for Mr. Taylor.
Okay. You say the board has done a lot to cut wasteful spending. Could you tell us a few of the things the board has done?
Absolutely. Let me know when I run out of time. So we combined a lot of full-time equivalent positions, juvenile detention and the assistant director, human resources and the assistant director. We saved over $68,000 in the first year on energy alone. We closed a building, $1.2 million. That old county home called Prairie Hills, we did a long-term facility studies plan, and $1.2 million was going to be spent in a decade's time on energy and wasteful maintenance for what? A weight room and a kitchen for the law enforcement center. We were able to close that building, move the kitchen to the law enforcement center, and build a very small footprint for the jail staff and the sheriff's personnel. Those are just some of the ways that we've been able to also look at a couple of unnecessary positions in juvenile detention at the recommendation of the juvenile detention director, as well as look at other efficiencies and ways that we could be more efficient with our tax dollars.
Thank you. Ms. Weaver-Basie, your question will be for Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith, what can be done to help further development in our small towns?
When we look at development within our smaller communities outside of Sioux City, we really have to look at what we're doing with infrastructure as a whole. What we're doing to maintain our rural roads and then also increase broadband access, and what types of grants are out there to help do that, and how we do systemic evaluations to make sure as we spend our money, they are improvements that are strategic in their benefit to the local communities, so that we can help facilitate the growth of business in our local communities, and for those folks that would like to live in a smaller community but commute to this, the county seat, make that transition easier for them and less of a safety issue.
Thank you. Mr. Gottberg, your question will be for Mr. Ong.
Thanks. Matthew, it's no secret, and it's very common knowledge, the tax levy's gone down at least 4 years in a row, which I think residents are happy about. But despite that, property taxes keep going up. There were more people that protested their tax evaluations and in the city and the county than any time in recent memory this last year. What, if anything, can the county do to try to resolve that? It's great the levy goes down, but property taxes are still going up. So how do you, what other ways possibly could that be resolved?
And that's the greatest challenge that we face, Woody, is being responsive to the taxpayers as far as the rate, and also being responsive to the services that they require. You've heard services that are needed. You've heard more money that's needed. At the same time, you've heard questions asked of how to cut expenses. So it is notable that what the county did was lower the tax rate, both in assessment and non-assessment years. Now, one step the county did take was, in a spirit of that cooperation and collaboration, spurred by recommendations from taxpayer watchdog groups, was to request a combination with the city assessor. Our county assessor does a great job and is very successful at blocking some of those state-imposed increases. But as for what we can continue to do, I think it's just to leverage our funding. The county doesn't have the economic development funding that the city does. And so if we can leverage our funding, whether it's through comprehensive plans, whether it's through strategic hires, I think that as long as we're providing improved services, that if there's a growth in the tax base, people know that's where the income is coming from.
Thank you. Mrs. Hartnett, your question will be for Mr. Clayton.
Hey, my question was about security. You say you have 19 employees, is that correct? They work in three buildings?
Correct.
And at the courthouse, you have that one entry in the metal detector. Do you think that, say at Trosper Hoyt, do you need that kind of a setup as well?
Well, I really only have two buildings now. I have the Trosper Hoyt building, and then we have the Anthem Little Courthouse in Anthem. Do we need it? Of course we do need security. Can we afford it? That's up to my supervisor friends here to make that decision. I don't feel unsafe where we're at now. I didn't feel unsafe in the courthouse. The security is fine. I don't have a problem with that. I go through it at least twice a day when I go to the courthouse to make my daily runs. And if we had it in the Trosper Hoyt building, unfortunately, the way that building is designed, it would be much more costly to secure that building as opposed to just the courthouse. Would I be opposed to it? No, I wouldn't be opposed to it. Am I going to demand it? Not necessarily. I haven't had anybody in my office fear for their lives or even express a desire that we should push for it. So I do realize on second floor we have judges and courtrooms up there. So if they want it, then I would say let's do it.
Thank you. We'll change the order. We'll change on the panelists again one more time. Mrs. Hartnett, then your question will be for Mrs. Lee.
Flora, you have said before, and I know we've talked a little bit about switching from Sioux Rivers to Rolling Hills, and you have said that you thought maybe there was a leadership issue that the dealings with Sioux Rivers weren't done as well as they could be. Could you expand on that?
Well, from what I see is that I do think there has been a leadership issue on both sides. I believe there's been conflict and that one side or the other does not get what they want, so it's kind of like, let's take our toys and go home. And what when we take our toys and go home, then who benefits from that? And not the citizens, because it's not about the leadership, those people sitting at the table. They have health insurance. They have access to physicians and psychiatrists and medication. And so I think what happened is that because of the conflict, we are going to lose a great deal of services in Woodbury County. I think our people are not going to get the quality of care that they had once received. And I think it is about the leadership. I think we're now going to be a big fish in a big pond, but still we're the big fish, but we're still not going to come out on top. We are going to get less bang for our buck.
Thank you.
That was an excerpt from last night's candidate forum with Woodbury County candidates in the November 5th election at Western Iowa Tech Community College. The candidates for the Board of Supervisors are Republicans Jeremy Taylor and Matthew Ong, and challenging them, respectively, are Flora Lee and Carter Smith. We also talked with incumbent Republican Treasurer Michael Clayton and Democratic challenger Bruce Garbey. I was on the panel asking questions along with Woody Gottberg, news director at KSCJ Radio, and Teresa Weaver Basie, a member of the League of Women Voters and a curator of education at the Sioux City Public Museum. There will be another forum presented by the League of Women Voters Thursday night at Western Iowa Tech Community College with state legislative candidates. You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. While the county candidates are usually familiar names and faces to voters, many of the offices down the ballot may be a bit of a surprise. There are 5 open seats on the 2018 Woodbury County Board Extension Council. Woodbury County Extension Service Director Molly Hewitt says there are 8 candidates for these offices.
They are. They help to set policy and determine programming for Woodbury County. So they oversee, they're the employer of the county staff, and they meet monthly to go over programming and make sure that we're meeting the needs of the county with what Iowa State can bring and offer to us.
So what kind of people do you want? Do people want to be in this role?
It's really open to anybody. I think, it's great to have people on the council that have knowledge of some of the community needs and that have experience in some of the areas where extension comes into play. The focus areas of our programming are 4-H and youth development, agricultural and natural resources, human sciences, where we have our nutrition and wellness programming, and then community and economic development. So any background in those areas is helpful, but it really is a position that's open to anyone that's wanting to step forward and serve.
How many seats are there?
Right now, we're going to be electing five people onto the council, and we have 8 people that are going to be on the ballot coming up this November 6th.
And so people will go in and they will select how many people this time?
5.
5 people this time.
You'll be voting for 5 out of 8.
Okay. Can we talk a little bit of just say of who they are?
Yeah, absolutely. We're doing a little bit of promoting just so people become more familiar with us. We refer to ourselves as ISU Extension and Outreach, but on the ballot, our legal name is the Woodbury County Agricultural Extension District. So it's a little confusing and people may not know that. We have 8 candidates. We have Jesus Sendeja from Sioux City. I believe Jesus works at the Gospel Mission. He's new over there. Julie Ebel is from Sioux City. She works in producing over at KTIV. Fitzgerald Grant is fairly well known around here from Sioux City and working at the Sanford Center. Barb Hansen is from Hornick. Barb currently, I believe, is at Midlands Clinic. She served for over 30 years at Mercy Hospital, and you may have seen her in a TV commercial last year. She's currently on our council and is rerunning for re-election. Kelly Locke is from Sioux City. She's a former 4-H member and is a veterinarian. Stacy Orndorff is from Correctionville. If you're familiar with Coffee and Nosh, that's Stacy. So she has an interest in family history with extension and interest in local foods and from Correctionville. Don Weiss is from Moville, and he's retired and serving the community as an extension council member currently. Also helps on our 4-H Foundation Committee. And Denise Wright is from Correctionville. Very involved with the Woodbury County Fair Board. She also is currently a Woodbury County Council member that's running for election and represents the Correctionville area.
These people on the Extension Council play an important part in what you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They provide the direction if as a group they decide they want to see programming increase in a certain area, if they want to be doing more outreach with economic development, or if they would like more focus to be seen on some of the human science programs. You know, it's kind of at their discretion. There are so many opportunities through Iowa State University for programs that can be offered. So it is important that, you know, the group be able to assess and have a pulse on the needs of the county and the communities. And that might be different. I mean, it is different for the smaller towns outside of Sioux City and then Metro Sioux City. So it's kind of finding a balance and being able to serve everyone through the programs and the information that can come from Iowa State.
Do you find that people don't really understand that these people are going to be on the ballot till they get there, or they're surprised by it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't see too much floating around about this vote. So that's why we're out here just sort of wanting to make sure that people understand who we are as Extension, what our name looks like on the ballot, the Woodbury County Agricultural Extension District. And yeah, these folks here that will be elected will serve a 4-year term for Iowa State Extension and Outreach in Woodbury County. And so it's a big commitment, and it's definitely, you know, important to our county. It's important to our staff that we have a great group, and we do have a great group. So we're anxious to see who the community votes in, and it's good for us to get out and just share who we have as options and those that have chosen to take a chance at having a seat on the council.
That was Molly Hewitt. She's the director for Iowa State University Extension and Outreach in Woodbury County. She outlined the candidates and the duties of the Woodbury County Board Extension Council. 5 open seats will be on the ballot in the November 5th election. You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. You may have seen the billboards around Sioux City talking about 0-3 prime age to engage. This effort aims to get parents engaging with their children from birth through age 3 and beyond. Brad Ligo is a retired Sioux City educator who is promoting the effort.
And the problem is that you've got folks out there that aren't understanding or nor working with their infant. I heard one mother say, "Oh, why should I talk to her? She can't understand me anyway." And 0-3 is where 80% of the brain growth happens. And so what she's actually doing, you could really label it child abuse by not communicating with her. I mean, really, it's horrible. And so what the community is trying to do is work with parents, give them information on things that they can do, that they can talk, sing, read, play, and encourage them to read at least 15 minutes to the infant. And even if they can't read, if the parents can't read, they can look at the pictures and make up a story to go along with it. And it's the turns that you take with the infant, with that child, because they'll respond to you. When you do that, what happens is that the neurons in the brain actually fire and lock in there, and that's where the brain growth happens at. And scientists have actually filmed this, showing the interaction and how that opens up neural pathways in the brain. And if you don't do that, you don't get the brain growth. And right now, we've got kids in our school system who are starting school 2 years behind. And it's very, very difficult to ever catch up. Most of them don't. So we're playing a catch-up game. So what could happen if we could actually get everybody on the same level when they start school, and the huge changes that would make?
Do you think it's just a misconception people have about when you have a baby, and, you know, sometimes people feel like it, you know, they don't know what you're saying anyway, so why should I talk to them like I talk to anybody else?
Right. Or why should I spend the time while I'm doing this to explain what I'm doing? You know, a parent, everyday activities, when they're going to the store, they can talk about, "Well, this box is, what color is this box? You know, how many cans do I have here? One, two, three cans. Yeah, is that right? You know, things along that line. And they can start incorporating numeracy, and they can do the colors and so forth. Because they're just like sponges then. I mean, they literally, every baby is a genius when you stop and think of all the material that they have to disaggregate and put together in language and all of the things that their little brains have to do. It's just amazing. And then not to work with them is almost criminal.
That was retired Sioux City educator Brad Lego talking about 0 to 3 prime age to engage. The campaign encourages parents to communicate with their children from birth to age 3 to help them learn and engage with others. You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Pianist Andrew Russo created a stir and came to notoriety at the Van Cliburn International Piano Competition in 2001 when he performed George Crumb's Little Suite for Christmas, 1979, a work that requires a performer to engage directly with the instrument strings. His reputation for performing challenging contemporary works has only grown since then. We recommend you looking up Body of Your Dreams by Andrew Russo on YouTube. But for his performance this Saturday in Epley Auditorium, Russo's program builds upon a more traditional repertoire. Morningside Piano Recital Series director Jim March joined Mark Munger to talk about the works Russo will perform.
He sort of made his career on current American composers and you know, music that was written within, you know, the last 5 to 10 years. And he's premiered a lot of pieces and commissioned a lot of new works. And he's been a real champion of kind of cutting edge contemporary music. But this is, he loves playing the classical repertoire and romantic repertoire too. So it's going to be fun to hear it.
It will be fun to hear it. And there's a lot in the program.
It's a huge program and a tremendously difficult one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, each piece seems to be the most difficult of that group of pieces.
he has a propensity for doing that, yeah.
So he begins with a beautiful introduction that's very welcoming, the Andante Spianato and Grand Polonaise Brillante.
Right. Yeah, it's one of Chopin's more accessible and really beautiful larger scale works. Chopin started writing the piece around 1830. He was 19 years old, and he started with the Polonaise, and then a few years later added the Andante Spianato to it. And Spianato means evenly or without any great agitation, and it really has this very calm, serene feel to the opening, almost like a lullaby or a nocturne in character. And the Polonaise dramatically contrasts
with
that.
It leads to that great fanfare of the Polonaise.
Yeah, these big octaves come in, and all of a sudden these piano fireworks start out, incredible passage work. It's a very high-spirited piece, countless bravura passages that are both thrilling but incredibly elegant at the same time, and certainly one of his most attractive pieces.
Andrew Russo will also perform one of the ballades, ballade number 4 in F minor.
Right, I think it's the largest of the 4 ballades. And, you know, if a ballade or a ballad tells a story, this is certainly, it comes across as a musical narrative. People have often speculated whether Chopin had program, any programmatic content in mind when he wrote the ballades. If he did, he never disclosed it, but you can't help hear this piece but feel like he's telling a very deeply personal story, you know, really bearing his soul to the world as this piece unfolds. There's a point near the end where there's a series of very quiet chords that are held for a long period of time, and a brief break, and then the coda just explodes onto the scene with all sorts of fiercely difficult passage work, and it just takes everyone by surprise, and it's quite terrifying, but terrifying to play, but it's really an effective piece, one of Chopin's very best.
Rachmaninoff follows with three different pieces, an etude, a prelude, and then one of the MoMA musicos.
One of my favorite quotes about Rachmaninoff's music is that Rachmaninoff's music was all meant for master hands, his own. And he was certainly one of the greatest pianists of all time, and he had massive hands, and which makes his music very difficult for people with normal size hands to negotiate. But it was really meant for top professionals on the concert stage. And this etude that Andy's going to start with really exhibits the beauty of of Rachmaninoff's harmonic language. His music was highly chromatic and very rich, lush, romantic harmonies. But there's a certain sense of fluctuating between major and minor keys in his writing. And it gives the music a certain modal spice from that ambiguity. And I think this C major etude that Andy's going to start the group with exhibits that very well. And it creates a sense of darkness in some of his works and a brooding quality, even when a piece is basically written in a major key. This is an odd feature of Rachmaninoff's harmonic language. Musico as a set of six pieces, kind of patterned after Schubert's works of the same name. There's different styles in there, different forms. There's a nocturne and a ballade, or a barcarolle, and variations. And this particular one that Andy will play is kind of in the form of an etude. And it's very similar in figuration and character to Chopin's revolutionary etude. Flying figurations in the left hand and, very heroic in character.
And that musical moment brings to the end the final piece of the first program, which is hard to believe that we're only at the final.
This is only intermission
of the first half, which is variations on a theme from Carmen, another great pianist transcribed Bizet's Carmen for this.
Horowitz. And it's based on the Gypsy Dance from Act Two of Carmen. This is the only one of Horowitz's many transcriptions that he consistently kept in his repertoire throughout his entire career. Other ones would come and go in favor, but this one he played throughout his entire career. And for decades, he kept the score secret. He wouldn't allow anybody else to see it. He wouldn't allow it to be published. But with passing years, the variations evolved somewhat. They became increasingly sophisticated. We can hear recordings of Horowitz playing it at various points in his career. And the piece improved gradually, and finally Horowitz relented and they were published. So it's...
Well, from what I read, he seemed to have somewhat of a rocky relationship with these pieces because people knew they linked these pieces to him and expected him to play them and almost didn't pay attention to other things.
He got very frustrated because people would applaud at the end of his concerts until he played some of these show pieces. I mean, they're absolutely stunning, but then they would kind of forget about some of the magical things that happened during the recital itself, you know, and that frustrated him very much.
Prokofiev begins the second part of the program.
A couple movements from Lieutenant Kijé, which was a film that came out in 1934 with music by Sergei Prokofiev. And a very fine pianist, Frederick Chu, arranged a couple of movements from this film score that Andy will be playing. And Andy actually studied with Frederick Chu in Paris for a couple of years. And Chu's transcriptions are very much in the tradition of the, you know, the virtuoso transformations of various symphonic works that were written by Liszt in the 19th century, or of the transcription that Horowitz wrote for the Bizet piece from Carmen. Wonderful creation of orchestral timbres and sonorities. Very effective piece.
But then we go backwards and hear a work by Johannes Brahms.
A bit of unusual programming because Andy decided to just lift a single movement from the Brahms F minor sonata. Usually that's played in its entirety. But he's decided to play only the slow movement. In the score, Brahms wrote copied down several poetic lines. I forget who the poet was, but the lines read, "The evening dims in twilight, the moonlight shines, there are two hearts united in love, and they embrace each other in rapture." And then follows this exquisitely beautiful slow movement. This tender nocturne really sets up some fireworks to come in the final piece. Balakirev was kind of the self-appointed leader of the so-called Mighty Handful, which was a group of Russian nationalist composers in the second half of the 19th century. And Balakirev was inspired to write this particular piece on a trip he had to the Caucasus mountain region in Russia. He was awed by the beauty of the area, and he just immersed himself in the folk music and the culture that surrounded him there. And he made the acquaintance of a Circassian prince who played some folk tunes for him on an instrument that was something like a violin. And one of these tunes was a dance called Islame. And Balakirev just fell in love with the tune and he began to arrange it immediately for the piano. And in filling out the composition, he felt he needed a second theme for the piece. And this was also turned out to be a borrowed tune. It was a tune given to him in Moscow by an Armenian actor. And this actor said it was a piece that was well known among the Crimean Tartars. And so the piece was composed rapidly in the span of a month, and it's immensely difficult. And Balakirev, who was a top-rate pianist in his own right, admitted that there were parts of the piece that he was not technically capable of executing effectively. And so this mystique grew up around the piece, and its technical difficulties have made it a favorite of virtuosi for nearly 150 years.
So it all leads up to this.
Very, very easily, yeah.
I appreciate it once again. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
Andrew Russo will perform this Saturday in Epley Auditorium. The recital begins at 7:30 p.m. It's free and open to the public. That's it for this week's edition of The Exchange. Thanks for listening. I'm Mary Hartnett.